Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and I'm very happy to have on my show today an old friend, a good friend, someone who's making a revolution in the world of yoga, in the world of consciousness, in the world of connecting to the body. She's called Guru Jagat, and her new book, her beautiful book, is called Invincible Living, The Power of Yoga, The Energy of Breath, and the Other Tools for a Radiant Life. Hi, thank you, Guru Jagat, for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This is a very, very beautiful book. I mean, the layout, the pictures, the descriptions. Talk about, you know, your inspiration for this and what drove you to write it.
Well, I really feel like this book is a love song to my teachers and to the yogis and the sages and the meditators who've been holding a certain frequency on this planet for thousands of years to help all of us evolve. And so this is my small contribution, a love song to that kind of mystical, incredible lineage of seekers and of humans that have, you know, evolved themselves and also inspired others to do that. So that's kind of that's one of the reasons, and definitely the kind of heart behind the book is a love song. And you know, I knew that I needed to write a book because I am a writer, which was kind of funny because when we were talking about writing the publishers, I think they're not used to people like us actually being writers. And I know you're a writer, Alan. I'm actually a writer. And so it was very cute where they were like, no, it's okay. Like, we'll get you a writer to write the book, you know, because I think they're just used to people not really having the actual artistic or kind of grit to actually write a book. And I said to them, no, actually, I actually am a writer. Like, I really am excited to write this book. And so it was a great experience of just, you know, learning how to, first of all, writing a 300-page book is no joke. I mean, it really is not. And then you have, as you know, as you've seen, it's like has all the photographs and the illustrations. And it's really, it's a task. So it's always, we don't know those things before we do them, because maybe we wouldn't do them if we knew how much work it would be.
It's a huge amount of work, but the way they put it together, the layout and the quality of the pictures and just the whole design makes you want to buy this book, makes you want to have this book in your hands. But I also want to tell people that Guru Jagat is the founder of the Rama Institute in Venice Beach, California. It is a Kundalini yoga institute, and really this book, Invincible Living, is a tribute to the power of Kundalini yoga. So we can talk about Kundalini yoga, or really what I'd like to talk about is your brand of Kundalini yoga, like what you've done with the Yogi Bhajan teachings and how you've taken it into the 21st century, into another level, into the mainstream. Talk about your vision of Kundalini yoga and how this book is a vehicle for that vision.
Well, you know, the Institute, I really, and I think me and you have talked, Rama Institute, both in Venice and then my institute in Palma de Mallorca, Spain, both are places that I wanted to create kind of this intersection between art and science and meditation and community and friendship and children and parents and, you know, people. We have all sorts of, you know, people meeting each other and falling in love and art, you know, creating art and thinking different ways and changing our perception, which is, I know, your, you know, big kind of mission on the planet. And so,
yes.
So place. And it's not just Kundalini yoga, though that is my lineage and my mission, but just a place where we can go and it's not separate our spiritual lives from the rest of our lives. And I really feel proud. I actually dedicated the book to the community of Rama because I'm so proud of what's happened, just the kind of fireworks of that kind of exploration and all these different humans and you know, maybe some aliens too, coming together and, you know, a bit of a Star Wars bar. Coming together and having kind of all the idea and the practice of just creating a space in themselves and a space together that is a place where people can heal and change. And so the book is, you know, yesterday, and the guy was, I loved this guy. His name was Alan too. Mm-hmm. And he kept on calling it, he's not a yogi and he's totally like, he's like a fitness guy. And he kept on calling it, he's like, this is kind of like the blue collar yoga. And I was like, I was just so thrilled that he kept on calling it that because who would have thought that Kundalini yoga, which just seems so esoteric and out there, we wear white and all this kind of stuff, that like a guy like that could be, read my book. And then what he got from it was, this is something anybody could do. Like any guy in middle America could get something from this book and practice it. And so I feel like that was a mission accomplished kind of moment.
It's
called the blue collar yoga. I was like, yeah,
it's great. No, it is a mission accomplished type book where, but what's great about it is, it's almost like a transmission. It is sort of a transmission. Reading it and just the language in the writing, you're getting inside people's mind. You're like doing yoga on their minds, you know? Did you have that intention?
I did, totally. In the beginning there was the word, and the word was, you know, however you want to say it, but the word, the sound, word, the way that words are put together, the spell, the spelling, the vowel. I mean, this is, you know, ancient ways of kind of reorganizing consciousness. And so I very much, I mean, I rewrote the book like 5 times. I was meticulous as much as I could be in creating kind of a soundscape that actually goes into you and changes you just from the holding of it and the seeing the images. We're so visual now. I really wanted it to be for younger people. And I have these like 6-year-olds who had my book, and they, it was a pre-order copy, and they did not want to give it away. I mean, they had it open. They were looking at all the pictures. They were reading the parts that they could read. And I was like, this is amazing. If the 6-year-olds, like, this is enough of a storybook that they find this fascinating, then, you know, I feel like we're definitely moving. There truly is something for everyone in it. And that was my intention, is let this be in Walmart. Let this be in Costco. Let this not preach to the choir. I really want everyone to feel like they can do something to make themselves feel better, because people are fucking scared.
They're scared about the future, you mean? About Donald Trump and all that?
All that? Yeah, I mean, the most searched, one of the most searched terms after the election was, how do I deal with anxiety? And I just, that really hit me. I didn't know when but we had to push the pub date, and it was going to be in October, and then we had to push it to January. And I had no idea at the time what kind of divine, you know, alignment that was, because I do feel like there's so much in the book that can help you with whatever levels of anxiety or insomnia or just kind of lethargy or fatigue that you're dealing with. And certainly, I think the election has brought a lot of that to the surface.
But can you give me an example, like how using the book or even using the yoga to deal with anxiety, what do you suggest?
Well, one thing that I'm launching this year, along with the book, is something I'm calling the Deep Breath Initiative. And I just launched our foundation called Rama Foundation, where we're bringing yoga and wellness, meditation, and all sorts of consciousness to underserved populations. And you know, I think on the simplest level, which is what the Deep Breath Initiative is, if you breathe deeply through your nose, anywhere from 1 minute to 3 minutes a day, no matter what you're doing. You can be cooking, you can be driving, you can be waiting for your kid after school or sitting at your desk, and you just, and really start to train a deep breath into the body, you will completely have a shift in your mood, in your hormones, in the endocrine secretions. I mean, that's how simple it can be, all the way up to massive amounts of esoterics. I mean, we get into all sorts of esoterics as well, but it can be that simple. Just deep conscious breath for 3 minutes a day can change the way you're viewing your world. And we need some people on the planet who know how to change gears. Like Yogi Bhajan called the chakra system a gear system. Mm-hmm. And basically, very practically, if you know how to balance your own chakra system, then you basically know how to drive a stick shift. You can shift gears at any moment of the day in a way that's going to be more productive, give you more energy, give you clarity, give you some sort of inspiration or creativity, make you love more, make you more present, make you, you know, these are kind of, you know, esoteric chakras, like, you know, is it, not now, but definitely at some point was kind of an esoteric term, but it's very pragmatic to be able to balance your own kind of gear system. And then when you need to, you can shift gears, and it happens at a moment's notice. And that's a successful person in this very complex time on the planet.
Well, that talks about the whole technology of Kundalini yoga. Can you give us a background into that whole system Yogi Bhajan developed, and also add, you know, your piece? Like, you know, you have this great system, and yet you come in and also do something. But first talk about, like, the technologies in general that you've received.
Yeah, so Yogi Bhajan basically he spent the first part of his life going, well, first being trained yogically by his teacher, Sanazara Singh, and then and had very intensive training with him from 8 years old till 16. And then his teacher, as a good kind of master will do, he said, get out of here. I don't ever want to see you again. And so he kind of set out on a journey to go through the Himalayas and to all sorts of places in Pakistan and all in Nepal and Tibet, and to receive these secret esoteric kind of meditations and kriyas and movements and breaths from all of these different yogis that were holding vibrations in, you know, like he would find out, someone would say, oh, there's some sage or yogi that meditates in a cave outside of this particular town. And he would go and find them, seek them out, and receive a meditation. So I say this all the time. I mean, we don't understand in the West that, you know, in order to receive even just one of these meditations that Yogi Bhajan so freely gave to Westerners, 8,000 of them, in order to receive just one of them, oftentimes families would have to, over generations, prove their devotion and their practice and their loyalty. I mean, this is the age that we came from, but we're now in a much faster age, and Yogi Bhajan knew that. So he brought these teachings to the West and basically gave them freely to a bunch of undeserving Westerners, knowing that, as the Dalai Lama said, the Western woman is going to be kind of the vibrational holder and caliber holder of this next shift on the planet. And so he specifically worked with the women. And so he gave 8,000 of these practices that he collected, and through his yogic training as a young boy and his teacher, and through several kind of lineages, both coming through Sikhism, through the Udasi yogic lineages, where these more esoteric yogic lineages, and then through the Tibetan yogic lineages, the Hindu yogic lineages, the rishis. And so he kind of amalgamated a lot of these very powerful teachings, and also simple and fast. So that's one thing he said all the time, is that one of the differences between Kundalini yoga and other yogas is that we go into the higher chakras. So it's not just seven chakras. We go into the eighth chakra and then even beyond. And the eighth chakra is the aura. And in this coming time, on the planet, more and more and more people are understanding that there's an energetic sequence and vibration and consequence to the sequence of vibrational kind of current they put out into the world. And that, you know, there's different ways to explain that, but you know, The Secret came out 20 years ago. So this isn't like, none of your, you know, listeners are going to be that this isn't, you know, rocket science, but that we have a vibrational kind of current, and we can, when we learn to master that auric space or that vibrational current, we can start to maneuver through the matrix in a much more kind of enjoyable way. So I think my gift and my kind of mission with these teachings is I am a modern woman. I'm also a devoted yogi, but I'm a very modern woman, and I am not religious. I'm an artist. I'm a seeker. I'm curious, and I'm, you know, I've spent my life, and that's how I met you, Alan, you know, really kind of no stone left unturned to really explore myself. And so that, and I'm not afraid of myself. I think that's one of the big things. Like, a lot of people get into spirituality or yoga or something to basically avoid themselves even more. Mm. And one of my big kind of messages is, this is about actually turning towards ourselves, and for whatever, however many lifetimes we've spent running away from ourselves, that we have an opportunity now to really dive into the galaxy of our own incarnation.
Mm. Like the infinite being, the invincible being. What do you mean by invincible, though?
Well, invincible is a word that was used by a lot of the yogis in kind of these like victory mantras or victory codes of opening up the pineal gland and the higher consciousness, and how that created a victorious human incarnation. And so I got it from, my invincible came from one particular yogic kind of poem that was written by an incredible yogic practitioner named Guru Gobind Singh, and his whole, even the rhythm of it is this kind of rhythm of victory. And I've always been so inspired by that. And it kind of sounds like, you know, back in the day, the New Yorkian slam poets and the...
But what does that mean, victorious living?
Has that rhythm of...
Sorry, you cut out.
What does victorious living mean?
Yeah, what does that actually mean?
Well, what it actually means is that, you know, invincible, he used the word invincible, or victory is a word that Yogi Bhajan used a lot. Basically, it means that you have victory over your time and space, so you're not a slave to your mental projections and intrigues and the way that we, you know, spend lifetimes torturing ourselves and others because of our own subconscious kind of quagmires. And so a victorious human being is one that's done enough self-inquiry and enough cutting through their own self-deception, to use Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche's term, that they can actually be themselves, which is, we don't even know who we are. We have no idea. And so the whole kind of spiritual or yogic or meditative or contemplative pursuit is to kind of touch into ourselves, whatever that place is. It's indescribable, really. There's no words to put on it. You know, it's very hard to find those words.
Oh, so what I'm getting from listening to you and also seeing the book, it's time for a real embodiment. I mean, Kundalini yoga gets you in your body, but it also activates the energetics that are beyond the body. So there's this coming together of both the material and non-material essence, right?
Yeah, totally. Because I think, you know, I grew up in the 80s kind of new age scene. And there was a lot of, what my experience was there was a lot of people kind of looking to get out of their bodies or get, you know, float above their bodies or not really be, their spiritual practice was kind of making them space out or kind of be disembodied. And Yogi Bhajan said, there's lots of different ways towards the thing, the one, ourselves, the soul, whatever you want to call it. call it, but through the physical practice, the yogic kind of practice of getting prana into the meridians, getting breath into the nadis, which are these pathways, 72,000 pathways that run through not just the physical body, but the energetic bodies, that when you open that and you awaken that energy, you're able to just hold the frequency of higher consciousness more in a more capable way and for longer periods of
time.
Physical experience of, it's very functional. And so I think that's kind of one of the beauties of Kundalini yoga. It's like, we're not trying to just be in our bodies, where I think a lot of Western yoga has kind of gotten there. We're not trying to just be in our bodies, but we're using the body as the diamond vehicle to open up the consciousness.
No, I think that's a really good point. So the technology of Kundalini yoga helps us increase our vibrational capacity so we can be more incarnate. We could be more in touch with our body, our intelligence, the present moment, as our good friend Paul Lowe would say. Is that part of it, or is there's more to it than that, though, right? I mean,
it's so bizarre to be in a physical body, in the immensity of the soul, in the infinite kind of experience of the soul, that Yogi Bhajan often said, when you incarnate into what is actually a very coveted incarnation, the human incarnation, because we get to feel, we get to have heartbreak, we get to have loss, we get to have gain. It's a very visceral experience of a human incarnation. He said, the whole game is, how do you have the infinite experience in the finite form? And that's what all the teachers, you know, that's what all of the great teachers really, you could, you know, crystallize the essence of their teachings into some version of that.
That's great. No, that's a really good takeaway point. You should use that, actually,
in all your
interviews, because
I
think that's the important thing here, that I think the technology of Kundalini yoga and embodiment yogas do is realize that we are the infinite being within the limits of the human sphere. But, you know, the merging with the divine or the invincible is to realize that, realize our forever nature. But the other part I'm getting to is the planetary awakening, how, you know, we're the collective mind. So talk about Kundalini yoga and the book reaching the collective consciousness of the race.
Well, we're rapidly getting towards a tipping point of the real kind of ascension of human consciousness, which in my opinion is what all these prophecies, even the through the Christ, you know, prophecies and the Mayan prophecies and the all of the kind of different prophecies of this age, really is about that kind of critical mass moment where there's enough people, life forms on the planet that are in some way turning towards love or turning towards expansion instead of contraction or whatever you want to call it. They're, you know, making a conscious choice towards that, then we're going to be in a whole new, it's going to push us into a whole new vibratory essence or experience on the planet. So I think it's rapidly happening. And my opinion is that this kind of new regime, political regime in America, is the last kind of ditch effort of some of the kind of dying consciousness that's circling the drain, as my friend Patty calls it. This is like the last dying breath, because we still have a couple years left in this Kali Yuga. So we're, you know, this is a who else but Trump to bring us to the end of the darkest era on this planet that we've known for hundreds of thousands of years.
Well, I know. I think he's the perfect manifestation of everything that was wrong with the system. Here it is in one person, or whatever you want to call him. And this, because he's such a self-indulgent narcissist that he's barely human. He's barely in his body. If you look at him, he's like a walking ball of reaction. He's, you know, he does symbolize, you know, the greed and the lust for power and the misogyny and the disconnection. I mean, we all do in some ways, but he's like the embodiment of that. So we're seeing a really clear picture of what we don't want to be. That's my political analysis, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you.
And so if we see that, then
there's a major.
What?
Oh, I couldn't hear you for a second. There's major perfection in, I mean, he really is like, he couldn't be more archetypally perfect for the mirror of what needs to kind of be cleansed from the collective consciousness. But that doesn't mean it's comfortable. And so we got a lot of work to do. And my prayer is that this book can make it to a lot of people who normally, I mean, one of the things that I thought was interesting, I saw this great interview with this really sweet family, working class family from Ohio, that normally that whole district votes Democratic. And the guy, I'm forgetting his name right now, but he's a really beautiful reporter and he has something called the Love Army. He was there kind of talking to them about like, well, why did you guys vote for Trump instead of Hillary Clinton? And they said, we felt like she totally forgot about us. Like she didn't even include us in the kind of rhetoric of her campaign. And that was really something. That's why I was so happy that guy yesterday was calling it blue collar yoga, because I feel like a lot of the, you know, many people just feel like they're not, you know, there's so many barriers to entry in terms of having some sort of meditative practice or contemplative practice or spiritual, you know, whatever you come, or even fitness, like yoga for fitness, you know, it doesn't matter why you come. And so I really want to speak to those two, you know, all the flyover states, as it's, I think, obnoxiously they're called, because I'm from West Virginia and those are my people. And I really want like this to, the evolution of human consciousness is not a bourgeois thing. It's an every person thing.
And it's a woman thing. You know, women, you know, for thousands and thousands of years were kept away, kept from speaking out. I mean, this is the embodiment of the power of women. Don't you think?
I do. I said this to my women's, group that I do this year long training every year, and I'm having them all write books. And one of the reasons is I read this, quote by Bell Hooks, which I'm going to paraphrase right now, but basically she just said, you know, write the book that you want to write, because you owe it to womankind, where so many women were not allowed to actually, you know, put their thoughts and their experiences into written form, particularly. And so I feel very, very, I mean, even in this day and age, in 2016, I feel very blessed as a woman to be able to have had the opportunity to put my, you know, art and my heart into written form.
So you didn't hold back at all. You're not like, you put everything into this, huh?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, I've been joking around with my teacher, Hadi Jeevan, who, you know, he basically, like, we've been talking about how you just write the same book over and over again. So you ask me now, it's been 2 years of a process, and I'm ready to write a new book, and I want it, I'm ready to make it better and write it better and give more.
Because you're evolving. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, I did. I gave everything I could with all the other things that I had to be responsible to and deliver in that time. And I gave it with, you know, the greatest heart. And now I'm ready to go deeper.
Well, I'm just looking at this little part, section here called the subtle signs, where you talk, anytime you talk to your partner, particularly male partners, start looking at the area of your forehead between the eyebrows. What is that about?
Well, it's, you know, one of the things that I think, and this isn't a popular, I had a woman in class yesterday get really mad at me, although she stayed and I was really proud of her, but it's not a popular belief in post-feminism that basically as a woman, and this is what the Dalai Lama is talking about and Yogi Bhajan talked about and many other teachers, as a woman, we hold the vibrational caliber of the whole society. When one, this Yogi Bhajan said, when one woman falls, a whole generation falls. Mm. It's not, that's how, and so women hold a vibrational frequency in their relationships, in their homes. And so one of the ways that we can work with men instead of being confrontational and being ball busting and being circumcised, you know, being, you know, just like the way that a lot of women have learned to be with men, which doesn't work. And we have a 75% divorce rate. Is we can start to be more subtle. And one way is to kind of vibrationally like project into a man's pituitary gland, which is where all sex starts, where turn on starts, where all communication starts. It's not the fifth chakra. It's the sixth chakra. It's the pituitary gland. We can start to kind of project our highest image of him or some kind of way that we want to hold a caliber for decision making or value setting and that kind of thing. Instead of what most women do is they're constantly vibrationally complaining, bitching, and being negative towards the men in their life, you know, very automatically, like it's very subconscious. And there's a lot of anger between the sexes that, as we've seen in this election, it's real. It's not a joke. And so there's a lot of healing that needs to be done. But one of my messages is, you know, as a woman, be more subtle, be more energetic. You'll notice that you're, if you like men, if you're into men, and it works with, if you are same, if you're into women, as well, because women are so subtle. But if you're into kind of working in a relationship with a man, whether he's your, you know, colleague or your romantic partner or your father or your son, you can start to kind of help him to vibrationally kind of come up and evolve with you instead of kind of what's happened. There's a great article, I don't know if you read this one, in the New York Times called The Men the Feminists Left Behind.
No, I haven't read that, no.
It's really good. It's really good. And it's really what's, you know, we gotta, like, that's kind of part of happening now is that, like, you know, Trump is an archetypal byproduct of kind of the confrontational way that we've dealt with the sexes. And it's totally reasonable for the women to be very angry towards men just on an epigenetic level. It's not, I'm not saying that that's there's not reason for that, but there's, you know, it's not going to get us anywhere, basically.
Right. But no, of course. But so you're saying with this little exercise, when you're talking to someone, I mean, men can do this to women too. You project or with intention, you project a picture of how you want to be into their third eye or from their third eye. What do you...
Yeah, into their third eye, you kind of project a more positive image of them or an image of them showing up in the relationship the way that you would want them to show up. You can also project like a sound, which would be, you know, in the Kundalini system, we use Waheguru or Satanama or Satnam. Or even victory is a word, a mantra that we use a lot. And it's just a way to kind of start to create a positive biofeedback. We have mirror neurons, you know, proven by Western science. So if you're mirroring a certain caliber and a certain positivity and a certain upholding of this person in their highest kind of image, they're going to start to mirror those neurons and they're going to start to behave that way. And I've seen it, I mean, firsthand. In my relationship, in my romantic relationship, 100%. I mean, really, like, I've just seen how powerful it is.
Mm. Well, let's talk about the sex as science section. You know, I'll quote here, Yogi Bhajan says, physical intercourse is called the bridge of seven constructions. You can elevate your physical, mental, spiritual body seven times over if it's an intercourse of mind, body, and soul. If it is sacred, if it is worthwhile. Otherwise, it's the dumbest thing to do. That's funny.
But. Yeah. I love when he talks like that. But yeah, Yogi Bhajan was, I mean, he endlessly gave teachings on sex. I'd like to write a whole book just on his teachings around sex. And I will, because I think... a lot of his teachings around sex have been kind of buried in certain ways. And I think people who have come across Kundalini yoga may feel like there's some frigidity around sex, and that's so Bhajan was. So I think it's important to bring these teachings out, because I feel like a lot of people are looking for a different relationship with sex, a different relationship with their themselves, their bodies, their lovers, however their kind of relational scope is. And Yogi Bhajan gave lots of ways that we can start to deepen the auric experience, the aura, and the coming together of auras through the sexual act, which is actually the most satisfying part of sex. That's with you for 7 years. And so I think you probably have had this experience. I hope, Alan, I've had this experience. When you have deep, penetratively energetic sex, it vibrates through you for a long time. It's something that you look back on.
Can still call up that feeling, actually.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, and then when it's meaningless, just, he called it mop and bucket, stick and bucket sex is what he called it.
That's funny.
When it's meaningless like that, and there's no breath and there's no kind of auric connectivity, then it really is very empty. And so many people feel that way, that it's like the Tinder sex of it all. But, to be very clear, you could meet someone on Tinder or on whatever your particular brand of that is, and have that kind of sex. I mean, it's not like, this isn't a moral kind of conversation. I'm really, really I want to, especially with the younger generations, because these crystal children and these younger soul kind of groups, they're much more evolved around everything. So there's less kind of uptightness around their bodies and around sex and around the way a relationship should look. And so it's not about moral code here or any kind of religious like code. It's really just about if you're going to have sex with someone, the point would be to have an energetic kind of connection through the auric space. And there's ways I give a lot of kind of ways to work with enhancing the aura. He said, Yogi Bhajan said, if you can like brighten and strengthen your aura before you come into the sex act, it's going to be a more satisfying experience for both partners. So instead of just being like a rando, we just like fall into sex because whatever, even if we've lived with this person for 10 years, we just fall into the sex because that's what we do. That's why people start to feel unsatisfied.
Wait, so is that an exercise you do with your partner before you have sex? You actively, consciously energize your auric field?
Yeah, and he said for 72 hours, so if you know you have a hot date, or if you know that you're, going to have some sort of sexual encounter, for 3 days you can do some things, eat a little bit lighter, do some pranayams, get into your body, take some walks, do some yoga, do some meditation, and actually consciously really brighten the aura. So when you come together, it's like a real cosmic event. And it's pretty, it's a great, especially if you are in a long-term relationship, but also if you're just dating, for 3 days to start to sext and to start to play and create energetic and otherwise kind of foreplay, it's very hot to do that. So just in the pragmatics of it, it creates a lot more magnetism when you finally go into the sex act.
Well, there's actually, you have some real specifics here. He says, or you say, for delicious sex, avoid doing it between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. And why do you say that here? Because of the sun.
Yeah, it's because of the sun. There's that degree of the sun to the earth between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. is a time more of your own personal practice, contemplative, meditative practice. And that's where you can really kind of do your self practice during that time. And then, sexual practice is good once the sun has come up, or, once the sun's gone down at night, or anywhere during the day. However, but during that section, the Amrit Vela is what we call it, is not really the time to have sex. It's more about a contemplative practice.
I see. But ultimately, sex is here to empower us to activate those vital essences in ourselves, and to, you know, something that I think Matak Chia talks about, leaving the sex act still with passion. You know, talks about the man, non-ejaculatory sex, and for women to walk away while there's still that intensity of feeling, as opposed to over saturation. What do you think about that? You know,
I think that that's part of the yogic training around sex and around intimacy, that we're so kind of, even just in like the sex porn, we're so overstimulated that we can't feel. And so if you have, you know, used a lot of porn, or you have, for women, like you've used like a French tickler or some sort of vibrator to masturbate or that kind of thing, you're actually desensitizing yourself, so that when you come into a sexual encounter, it's much harder to have kind of this cosmic orgasm experience, which is literally, that's the thing that will, it will change you on a molecular level. And so I'm constantly, and, you know, those cosmic orgasms don't have to happen in the actual sexual encounter. Once you start to train yourself, you can have one while you're creating art. You can have one while you're looking at a flower.
No, that's a good point. And the other thing
of reality.
No. I think that's a really good point. You cut out for a second. But I think not only does porn and, you know, those kind of toys, sex toys, desensitize ourselves physically. It desensitizes someone to the energetics of the other person. So you're not even feeling the essence of the other person if you are, you know, maintain that kind of isolation, you know?
Yeah. Most sex that people are having is basically two people masturbating. And there's no kind of, there's not much connectivity. But if you learn how to align your chakra system, and then when you go into the sex act or the sex of feeling and foreplay and energetic and otherwise, you can actually start to align your chakras with the chakra system of your partner. And then things start to go, you know, that's the good stuff.
How would you do that? How do you align your chakras to someone else's? I mean, would you say?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's some really simple ways of doing it. One way you can do it, very, very quickly is put spine to spine. So you go back to back with your partner and you just sit and breathe. There's a couple meditations we have that way, but you also can just sit and breathe back to back, spine to spine. And that will very quickly align the chakra system between two human beings. So that's one way of doing it. You can also do it belly to belly, which is obviously like in you know, the actual sexual encounter. Or, I mean, a lot of kind of yogic sexual practice, you can do without sex, but you're just kind of belly to belly and breathing. And that will also align the chakras before you get into the actual sex.
So as we activate ourselves through Kundalini, through higher intensity, physical contact, there's like an activation in the whole person. You know, as you say in your book, it opens up the creative genius and expands our artistic ability. And so what does, you know, if you had your vision of the future of what's possible, what does it look like from your point of view?
Well, it looks like, you know, I will say that we live on a polarity planet, and there are forces of polarity that are kind of part of just the gravity system of this planet. I don't know if there will ever be that everyone is, you know, the light and there is no dark, or that everyone, because we do live in a particular matrix here on this planet. Now, it is different on other kind of in other star systems and on other planets. We're coming into this golden age where the light is going to outshine the dark. And that's the vision of just that, on a practical level. that work for everyone, and people who are not so narcissistically, neurotically, habitually obsessed with their own suffering and their own kind of need to be comfortable in some way, that they can actually pay attention to if someone else's needs, or even like revolutionary, put someone else's needs before their own. I mean, even if we just had a large group of people who are willing to put someone else's needs in front of their own for even one, you know, hour a day, we would have an enlightened society. I mean, it really wouldn't take that much.
Right. I mean, no, it's true. And I think what you're also saying is you got to work on yourself first. You got to do the physical, the mental, the spiritual practices with yourself. If you really want the planet to show up, we got to do the work here, you know?
We do, and my point is we don't need to go to a cave and meditate for hours and hours or days or years or go on retreat. It doesn't need to look like that, but just spending some time turning towards the more expansive reality of ourselves every day is going to train the mind, and the mind just needs training. The mind is a powerful, powerful computer that needs the right input. And that's all meditation is. It's mind training. So if you train the mind to start to look towards the elegance of every moment, the beauty in another human, the beauty in yourself, then you're going to better, you'll want to spend your money differently, you'll want to create and work differently. I mean, it really isn't like, it doesn't have to be that huge. It can happen just one household at a time. And I believe, even with this current kind of situation on the planet politically, I believe one of the reasons why this is happening is actually the majority of the people on the planet want that. And that is actually what's happening. And the kind of fascist leaders around the world are this last dying breath of that kind of thing. But that the majority of the people on this planet want communities that are safe and healthy, and that your neighbor cares about you and you care about them. And I mean, that's what people want. It's only a very small amount of humanoids, or whatever we want to call them, on the planet that want war, strife, and pain and suffering.
No, I totally agree with you. And it's really, people just want to be happy. They want to have their families. They want, you know, food. They want their basic needs. This is what people want. They want the freedom of creative thought. They want the, you know, freedom of speech. They want freedom of expression, freedom to be who they are. It's simple. They don't want political power or like that, the manipulation of masses. They just want to live simply. That's our human destiny. I really think so. But, you've been running Rama for the last few years. It's a beautiful place. I love going there and visiting and seeing how everything's evolving and how your work is inspiring people. But what have you seen at Rama? Like, what are the like major in the people that come and the students you have? Like, what kind of miracle stories, if you want to share, from the practices you've been doing that you can tell us about?
Well, I think we're, you know, in somewhat of a bubble in Venice Beach. And this is why I created Rama TV, because I really wanted to go broadcast out to the places that are, you know, not Venice Beach. And so a lot of the miracle stories that I hear, even though I see, obviously, all humans are, you know, all humans want transformation. And the people who come to my class who have the privilege and the luxury to live on the west side of LA, they are, you know, certainly an incredible group of creatives and powerful people, and so much is happening, so much prosperity, so many like businesses and children and love has been born of everyone's kind of collective practice at Rama. It's really beautiful. And then, you know, people, like, it's like the whole cycle of life. It's like there's a lot of death happening right now. A lot of 2016 is a completion year, so like the deaths and the births and the businesses and the love affairs and the art and the creativity and the friendships that have been born of Rama Institute, just like that inspires me. That's the good stuff. But the miracle kind of stories that I background from people out on in the empire, out on the edges of the empire that are watching Rama TV as like a lifeline, and have no kind of spiritual community, have no, not a lot. Many people don't even have a yoga center anywhere near to them. And those are the kind, those are lots of just like incredible stories I hear from people, from veterans who get off. We offer free yoga on Rama TV and at the Institutes for Veterans and Active Service Members. And so they, you know, I hear a lot of just like getting off all the pharmaceuticals that they were on, and just huge amounts of healing that happen, and the trauma clearing from their systems, their nervous systems, and the, you know, we're talking like major, like keeping people from suiciding. I mean, it's the real stuff. It's like, it's life and death. As well as just like incredible stories of miracles around prosperity and you know, single mothers who were, you know, in a bad way and start to do some of these prosperity meditations, and all of a sudden they have, you know, they're able to take care of them and their children. And, you know, it's like we hear those kinds of stories every day. It really is, you know, I feel, and that's why I created the foundation, because I believe that everyone should have this opportunity. And so we're working pretty hard in 2017 to, we're going to open a room, a Rama room in South Central LA, where all wellness and meditation and yoga and organic groceries will be free to anyone who wants to come and partake. So
is there one particular story that maybe you can tell of some person, I mean, you don't have to name their names, but who came in a real mess and, you know, stuck with the practice, maybe even hated the practice because they're difficult practices, but now is a different person. Is there anybody like that?
Yeah, there was a woman. I love this story because I just think it's hilarious. It's like such a great human story, which is that she, you know, one of her friends was badgering her about watching me on Rama TV. And, you know, she just finally got sick of the friend badgering her. It wasn't even that she wanted to change or do anything. She was, you know, chronically depressed, a lot of anxiety, overweight, just in a horrible kind of, I think she was unemployed at the time. And, you know, just to continue to live. And she finally, just because she wanted to have her friend stop bothering her, she sat down in front of the Rama TV, you know, my class of the day, and she literally sat down. She had a, you know, some sort of back issue. So she sat down with a back brace in a back jack in front of the computer with a pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream. and she was like, you know, fine, fuck it. If I'll watch this, but I'm going to eat ice cream. And like, I can't even move, you know, I have like this horrible back issue and I'm overweight and all this stuff. She was so captivated by it that she just started in a couple weeks, you know, she lost the ice cream. She lost the back jack. She started doing some of the exercises, some of the meditations. Then in a couple months, you know, her whole brain chemistry had changed. She lost some weight. She started feeling really good. And then now she's been practicing with us for a couple of years, and she has like an amazing job, and she's totally functional and lost a bunch of weight, feels amazing, is not depressed anymore. I mean, it's that kind of stuff. Like there's a million stories like that, but that I loved that where she started was, you know, with a back brace, eating Ben and Jerry's, watching Rama TV.
No, that's a great story. That is real. That's inspiration for anyone listening. And well, how can people see Rama TV?
So Rama TV, there's lots of free content on it, so you don't have to become a member. And we do a lot of live streaming for free, and I really try to make it a lot of community service on the site. You also can become a member and get other content as well, but it's Rama, RAMA-TV.com. And so yeah, you can jump on there and kind of explore yourself through the Kundalini yoga and meditation no matter where you are. So it's a fun tool.
So what about you? What's like your big vision? What do you want next? I mean, you have a beautiful book, you have a beautiful center here and overseas. I mean, what's your big vision now?
Well, the legacy mission here is that I want to create a Rama University and also the kids' school. So I want to create an actual new educational experience that's based in these kind of yogic sciences and Dharma art and using technology for good and using the social sciences and the contemplative practices and the sound sciences to really study the shift in human evolution. And then the kids' school is really, really important to me, that we create a school where there can be a really interesting and Aquarian and revolutionary education system that's happening, and through the foundation all to be subsidized so that any child who wants to come and get that education can. So my big mission is around education, both of young children and of the young minds, because the future is bright. These children are so amazing that are coming on the planet.
So with this, and then in your next book, what do you want to say that you didn't say in this? Like, what's your evolution brought you to now to express as a kind of peek into what's coming for you in your next book?
Well, I think the next book is about taking basically, this is the way that I see it. Like, each chapter of this book, I would love to make into an actual book and explore those subjects in a real kind of deep way. So I think that's, it's just about going deeper and I'm going deeper, you know, in my own spiritual practice and in my dedication and just in my mission. So I think anything that is coming from my kind of unique mind stream is going to be deeper. I think that's the like easiest way of saying it.
Can you just talk a little, and we're almost out of time, but can you talk a little bit about your mind stream? Like, you know, you're doing these amazing practices a couple of times a day. Like, what's happening inside your brain, but what are you receiving? What are you downloading? Like, where are you connecting? You can go a little out there. Like, what are you connecting to? Like, who's talking to you, and where's your mind go? Like, talk about those out there experiences if you want to.
Well, I think, you know, I feel like it's very magnetic to not particularly, you know, the sorcerer is unavailable, as Don Juan says. And I've learned a lot about, I think that's something I've very much learned more than ever in the past year or two, is to actually be a little bit more understated about, because yes, the answer is there is massive amounts of esoteric experience that I have in my practice. And I'm really into that. Like, that's part of what keeps me going, because I really, that for my particular thing, that I need the kind of out there experiences with the Pleiadians and the masters and the yogis and the visions and the Rinpoches. And I mean, that really like gets me, that makes me happy. But I also feel like that can be something that people focus on. You know, everyone's like obsessed with a past life experience, or with and instead of actually focusing on the true kind of practical progress of what's happening right here and now. So, but yeah, I mean, I think that like when you open yourself and you open your 10th gate, you open your kind of crown chakra, you're going to get, it's a satellite dish. I mean, you're going to get all sorts of communication and all sorts of kind of revelations when you do that. So it very much is a huge part of my personal practice.
But everyone can get this if they do these practices. It's not
absolutely. Yeah. It's not, nobody's more, there are some people on the planet that are truly more psychic than others, but they're very rare, and they It's not the norm. Really, everyone can open up the 10th gate, open up the crown chakra by, you know, kind of just one of these simple Kundalini exercises. The energy shoots up the spine, the crown opens, and you're starting to just open up into the cosmic intelligence. So it no longer is just your kind of small intelligence. It's the big universal intelligence.
Is that what you mean by quantum destiny? The last chapter in the book is called Quantum Destiny. Is that what you mean by that? Or what else do you mean?
Well, one of the things I mean by it is that a lot of times people incarnate, they have huge destiny, but they don't have the nervous system strength and the wherewithal, the clarity of mind to be able to actually deliver on that destiny. And then there are people who are my favorite people who like maybe didn't incarnate with as big, you know, as big of a kind of whatever destiny, you know, kind of mission, but they actually, because of their hard work and because of their attitude and their grace and their intention, they actually live above their pay grade of their destiny. And all of us know people and know ourselves, the moments we've kind of not delivered and the moments that we maybe like, you know, we're whatever, told we're or whatever the thing is, you know? So that's kind of what I'm talking about, is that like live your highest destiny possibility. That's really what you came here to do. And if you don't do it, you're going to feel unfulfilled. And everybody knows like that's the most harrowing thing about a human life. It's like you know, got the money or you got the girl or you got the sports car or you got the thing and you're looking around and you're going like, whoa, this isn't it. And what am I going to do now?
So what are people going to do now?
What are they going to do now? I gave a bunch of things in the book that like, even if you even just took one of those little meditations and actually practiced it for 3 minutes a day, you would start to change in you. And that's my thing is this isn't good for business, but like, I'd rather you do 3 minutes a day of something, the same thing, you pick something and do it 3 minutes a day, than go to a yoga class once a week. It's more effective. We need maintenance. We're humans. We need a maintenance dose.
Well, that's why this book is a beautiful manual for self-healing, actualization, creativity, prosperity, sex, balanced emotion. You've really put together something very beautiful in a great package that I think is really accessible for people. And thank you for doing this. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. And thank you for saying that. You know, you're such an incredible role model for me. And that means a lot to me. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Guru Jagat. This is a new book out on Harper Elixir, coming out January 2017. It's going to be in all the bookstores, right? Everywhere.
Yep, and you can order it on Amazon. You can go to my website, Guru Jagat, GURUJAGAT.com, and order it there as well.
Invincible Living. Remember that title. By Guru Jagat, and also check out her Rama Institute. Is that the website, rama.org?
It's a ramayogainstitute.com.
Okay, sounds like you're getting called away.
I have a little temple dog having a moment here.
No, okay, but thank you. And how can people get in touch with you in general?
GuruJagat.com.
All right, great.
Good adjustment.
Thanks.
All right,
thank you,
Alan, thank you so much.
Okay. Lots of love and good luck with this. It's going to be great. Okay, talk
thank
to you soon.
You.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.